Welcome to Winning STL, where we have conversations about how St. Louis can best compete and win in the battle for talent, jobs, growth, and equity. Winning STL is presented by Purina, who creates richer lives for pets and the people who love them, and is proudly called St. Louis home since 1894. Today, we're downtown at the Post Building, a dynamic workspace for geospatial and fintech in St. Louis. Joining me today is Dr. Giles Oldroyd, president of the Donald Danforth Plant Sciences Center. Giles, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
So Giles, you're the president of the Danforth Center. Let's talk about what that is for people that might not know as much about it as they should.
Yeah, so the Danforth Center is a center for plant science. We're the largest independent nonprofit plant science center in the world. We've been here for 27 years, and we were founded with a mission to deliver sustainable food security and to enhance the St. Louis area.
What might surprise people, I think it surprised me, is how central St. Louis is to these global issues as it relates to food sustainability and even security. I think everyone knows St. Louis is an ag tech hub, a biotech hub, but maybe it's bigger than that. So tell me, as someone who's not from here, people might have been able to pick up that from your accent. You didn't grow up here. What is St. Louis's role globally in this space?
I mean, St. Louis has always played, at least in the time that I've been in plant science, St. Louis has always been a major center for plant science. That's in part because of Bayer, but it's also largely in part because of the Danforth Center. There are more plant science PhDs here in St. Louis than anywhere else in the world. It's in the private sector, that's in the public sector. It's a combination of those. So we are a major hub for plant science. And the reason that the Danforth Center exists was because Bill Danforth saw the opportunity that plant science had to drive the economy of St. Louis, but recognized that there needed to be a center that nucleated that opportunity.
And there's a geographic base to it too. You mentioned that we are, you know, in the middle of the most productive farm area in the world.
Yes, so major production of American farming is within a 500-mile radius of St. Louis, and we're right in the center of that. So, and that's the most productive farming in the world. So, you know, we are the natural place to deliver all of that to that vast array of farming and essentially customers, the farmers, the solutions for their farming systems, whether that's seed, whether that's chemical inputs, or whether that's farming advice.
So we got here in part because Bill Danforth had a big idea that St. Louis could really play this central role. How do we keep this edge and how do we keep this position? What should we be doing as members of this community?
Well, I think, I mean, one thing is, firstly, just recognize it more. As a plant scientist, I've always known of St. Louis and I've always known of the Danforth Center. But since I came here, I'm sort of surprised how little the community even recognizes the opportunity that's there. Firstly, I think number one, just recognize that actually plant science and ag tech is an enormous driver to our economy, our local economy, and probably one of the greatest opportunities for growth in our local economy is almost certainly within that ag tech ecosystem.
So appreciating, understanding what it is that we do have, and I suppose being, you know, open when it comes to investment opportunities and
exactly.
You mentioned, I think there is a good connection with the business community outside of the people you work with at the Danforth Center. So that sounds like a very productive partnership.
The Danforth Center essentially nucleates the AgTech ecosystem. We have this incredibly vibrant community of business, small to medium-sized businesses surrounding the Danforth Center. There's Bayer across the road, one of the biggest players in the world in plant science and agriculture. But also we have many small to medium-sized companies that spin out, growing, that and as well as companies relocating to St. Louis, in part because there is this vibrant community, there's a fantastic workforce. With the Danforth Center, we have these great services like greenhouses that and capabilities that are available to that private sector. So we just had Pivot relocated their research and development from Berkeley to the Danforth Research Park.
You referenced earlier, and most people will know, with what's happening in the Middle East, I think so much inorganic fertilizer in the world goes through the Strait of Hormuz. That's been challenged. Is that a significant concern right now for American and global farming?
Absolutely, yes. Most American farmers, by the time the strait closed, a lot of American farmers had already bought their fertilizers. So, okay. You know, they tend to buy in advance. But now fertilizer prices have got just skyrocketed. So as we're moving through the season and the farmers are using up their reserves of fertilizers, it becomes more and more acute.
I see.
And the longer it lasts, you know, if it lasts all the way to next spring, if the farmers are paying these prices for fertilizers by next spring, that's the critical point, because that's when they're buying the fertilizers for their crops. I think it, for me, it just amplifies that need to change the system, to break that reliance.
You see an opportunity maybe to jumpstart or push? I don't want to put words in your mouth,
but... there's a really exciting movement, which is called regenerative agriculture. It's a farmer-driven movement. It's about rebuilding the fertility of our soils and reducing that dependence on those inputs like inorganic fertilizers. And for me, it is the future of farming. We should be, across the whole American landscape, farming much more regeneratively. And it's flipping the system where one, rather than depleting soil fertility, it's rebuilding soil fertility. And of course, soil fertility directly related to productivity and long-term sustainability.
Can I ask, how does the farming community, are they in line with this? Is this something that they need to be brought along?
There are a certain group of farmers who have fully embraced regenerative agriculture. And regenerative agriculture is essentially five principles. You don't plow, no-till. You never disturb your soil. You always have living material on your soil or living roots within the soil. It holds the soil in place, stops it blowing away, washing away, and also holds the nutrients on the land instead of sort of allowing nitrogen to wash off into our rivers and streams, holds it onto the land. And then also reducing the need for those inputs, and then reintegrating livestock along with crop plants. And it all flips the system such that you, instead of losing soil, you're rebuilding your soil fertility. Now, there's certain farmers who have embraced it wholeheartedly and completely identify as regenerative. A lot of farmers are not doing that, but most American farmers aren't plowing anymore. They're already gone to no-till.
What I don't know about the subject is significant, apparently.
But so from our perspective at the Danforth Center, we just want to make regenerative farming the most profitable farming method. And that means, you know, here in the Midwest, we leave the soil bare for 6 months of the year. That's awful for soil health. The soil blows away, it washes away.
You told me that off camera, that actually I thought, oh no, that's good. You need to give it a rest. That's not true. That you talked
not
about winter
at all.
Winter crops are important.
Absolutely. So can you tell me any other place in the natural world where the soil sits bare for 6 months?
I cannot know.
Right? Does it sound like a natural thing? It's not. It's absolutely
not
a natural thing.
Well, just I think winter, though, everything kind of dies in winter,
yes,
right?
But if you consider a prairie, it looks like it's dead. But in the soil, it's full of roots, living roots holding the soil intact. And those living roots are also maintaining a beneficial microbial community that supports that plant community. Now, when you leave the soil bare, your beneficial microbial community becomes depleted. They can't survive. There's no living plants to sustain those microbial communities. And there's nothing to hold the soil intact. So when it gets really windy, blows away, the topsoil blows away, or when it rains, it washes off. If you've got plants holding that, they literally hold the soil intact, right? And they also hold the nutrients on the land rather than allowing them to be washed off. So leaving the soil bare for 6 months is one of the worst things you can do. And so in the regenerative farming practices, you never do that. You stop disturbing your soil, so you stop plowing, but you also never leave it bare. From our perspective, actually, you've got the soil bare for 6 months. Imagine if you could grow a winter crop, and the farmers could harvest it in early spring.
So more profitable for them,
more
sustainable,
for the soil,
all these
more
things.
More sustainable, more profitable. It really drives the whole. So, or for instance, the perennial crop. Instead of growing annual wheat, you could grow perennial wheat and have a wheat that you just plant once and you harvest for 20 years. just like a vine, right? There are close relatives of wheat that are not annual, that are perennial, and we are domesticating the role in the process of domesticating those crops.
Wow, a lot to ponder with that subject. Maybe slightly less headier topic. You'd been to St. Louis, you'd told me a number of times because of its central place in this in the field that you're in. I don't think you'd lived here before, and you've lived here for 9 months. How's it been? What were your expectations? What's been different than you thought?
I've been very pleasantly surprised about St. Louis. It's a very beautiful city, and it's got world-class institutions that I wasn't aware of.
Okay.
You know, the Symphony, the Art Museum, you know, the things that the Rep Theater, the Muni. You know, these are institutions that actually are really enlighten our lives and bring culture to the city, and they are world-class. And I think, you know, one thing I've been surprised about, there is a humbleness in our modesty here in the Midwest, but particularly pronounced here in St. Louis. I don't think it does us good service.
You think maybe a little stronger in our boosterism?
Absolutely, absolutely. We need to be celebrating the institutions that are here in St. Louis. And I would say, you know, in that, the Art Museum, the sports, the Cardinals, and the Danforth Center, these are true assets here in St. Louis. And they are the things, they are the reason people want to live here, but they're also the drivers of our economy.
Giles, you've lived in a lot of places, and you travel, I'm sure, a fair bit. Are there things you see other places, other cities, that you think, why can't St. Louis get that together and do something like that?
So the other thing that's really surprised me here in St. Louis, which I've never seen before, is it's a strange balance of humbleness and civic pride.
I totally agree with that. Yes.
And the two things don't seem to agree with each other, and yet they exist at the same time.
I completely, strangely understand what you mean when you say that, yes.
So, and with that civic pride comes a phenomenal generosity of the community and a commitment to St. Louis that I've never come across before. With that commitment to St. Louis comes a drive to just make change. And as a result, you get so many different institutions, so many different nonprofits holding this different spaces, but with overlapping remits that
it
makes it very complicated to navigate.
So a more streamlined approach to community problem solving, community groups.
I would say work with the organizations that are here, stop setting up new organizations.
There's a limit to what we're getting when new things start. What does a specialist in the plant scientist world do in your limited free time? What do you do in these parts when you've got some time?
I love the arts. So I've been going to the Art Museum, going to
be
the Rep Theater. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Outpunching, I think, our weight class as an American city.
Oh, absolutely. And I live right next to Forest Park, so it's a delight to just be able to walk into the museums for free.
So I think I read in an interview you did or somewhere that you're into gardening, which is not shocking. All right, it's got to be an amazing garden, right? I mean, it's got to be good.
Well, so here I live in a flat, but we still have a home in London, and my garden is a native garden, so I'm supporting butterflies and bees. I'm not the traditional English garden.
Okay.
Which
is very manicured and bright.
Which is very manicured. You know, I look around here in St. Louis and I wish there was less monoculture of fescue grass and clipped hedges. I would love to see a little bit more of the native vegetation.
So again, back to Forest Park, while there are these beautiful gardens and what you love is when they let nature take over.
I actually, you know, I see a lot of lawns here in St. Louis, and I think, gosh, if some of those were prairies, native prairie, I much prefer a native prairie landscape.
Interesting.
Patches of native prairie with butterflies and bees and birds. That brings me much more joy than a clipped monoculture.
So when I'm mowing my yard in May, I should be letting it go and letting bees
pollinate. You know, you kind of need to get rid of the rye or fescue grass monoculture and bring back the native prairie. But, you know, actually native prairie, much easier to manage. You mow it, you cut it once a year,
Well, who could argue that, and who would argue this topic with you? Not me. Giles, I want to thank you so much. I've learned a lot, even prepping for this and talking to you. I think it's something that St. Louisans should know more about, what's happening at the Danforth Center, its place in this world, and why it's such an important part of the just the industry that allows everyone to eat, to live, to grow our population and the like.
I really like what Bill Danforth said, which is that we can do something amazing for the world while we also lift up the region. And that's what I see the Danforth Center doing.
I think a wonderful way to end. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.